the scoffers approached their fellow fighters in the resistance and they said, "What are the Allies doing? They're doing nothing. America hasn't come in. There's America sits over there behind its barriers of neutrality." America was not regarded as a world power at the time. America was regarded as a very strong nation indeed, but sequestered, cloistered away in its own isolationism, and there was no guarantee that America would do anything more than provide food for the British armies by the destroyer and the transport convoys across the Atlantic. There was no guarantee of that. So what did they have to hope for? You know, the boot of the Nazi armies was planted very, very solidly on Europe. And not only that, the majority of the people were collaborating and cooperating with them. Sometimes it seems like that to us. It has over the centuries. Where is the promise of his coming? This is where the armor of God plays a role again, doesn't it? Do you remember the helmet of salvation? Because if we know what salvation means, the fact that Christ lived, that there was a man on earth who lived, who proved himself by his behavior and by the supernatural occurrences surrounding his life to be the Son of God, that he died and was resurrected from the dead, that there is incontrovertible evidence which would be admitted in every court of law that he did rise from the dead, and that he offered salvation, that is the forgiveness of sins, a new start, and final success to those who would join the resistance forces on his behalf against the occupying government. Is this not the consciousness of salvation, that we have irresistible, absolute, incontrovertible proof that our side is going to win, and that those who are with us are more than those who are against us? If we wear the armor of God, you see, if we take pains to put it on, to keep it in good shape, to wear it constantly, then we won't ask, where is the promise of his coming? We won't. Well, for others, for other resistance fighters, life sometimes became just too hard. It became too hard for them. They thought of reprisals against their relatives. And living in sewers is not a pleasant experience. Living in caves in the middle of the European winter, in basements, constantly in fear of being ambushed, constantly in fear of being betrayed by your own friends. The uncertainty of supplies from the Allies. Sometimes a radio message would come from London saying, "Be at such and such a field at such and such a time, and we're going to fly a bomber over, and we're going to drop supplies," and they would wait and wait and wait, and the bomber would never come. And finally, it would drop supplies, but all the British could spare might be 18 automatic pistols to fight against the mechanized armies of the Wehrmacht in some county. 18 pistols and ammunition. It was very hard. The energy expenditure seemed to be unending. And hasn't it sometimes seemed like that to you, as far as the Christian resistance is concerned, that the energy expenditure seems unending? And it is true, the Christian life is often very hard. That is, the active Christian life, the life of the resistance fighter. You see, because there are some who style themselves Christians who are not in the resistance at all. More of that later. See, Paul said to Timothy, look, he said, endure hardship. He said it would come, that it would be difficult. He said, endure hardship as a good soldier of Jesus Christ. Did you accept that at baptism? That you were entering into the resistance forces at a time of occupation of this society by a hostile occupying army? Is that the way that you realized it? Did you realize what kind of commitment was involved? You see, we should have, because when you see pictures of 18 or 19 young people standing in the forest somewhere in southern France, being sworn in to the French resistance, and a little stockpile of 6 or 7 old rifles, which was the equipment which they had available, and these people knew what would happen to their families if the Gestapo found out. They knew what they were doing. Did we, when we were baptized, did we know? And do we comprehend that we are part of the resistance? the only group that is resisting Satan because we know his devices, we know what he's up against, and because we are the only group that is being directly controlled by the government in a far country, in a distant country, as the resistance was by the provisional governments in exile in London. Paul says this, Galatians 6 and verse 9. He says this, let us, God's resistance forces, let us not grow weary while doing good. In other words, it's possible. Do you see that, brethren? It's possible for a resistance fighter to grow weary. So if you know it's possible, then you can accept it and prepare for it, you see? So it's a natural thing if you find yourself growing weary in the Christian resistance struggle. It's a natural thing. It doesn't mean that the church isn't the church. It doesn't mean that you're not converted. It doesn't mean that there is no such thing as the Holy Spirit. It means that you're at war. And war is tough. It's very, very tough. So Paul says, let us not grow weary while doing good, for in due season we shall reap if we do not lose heart, like so many of the resistance fighters did. You know, what is frightening is when you read the documentation of the resistance. What is frightening, when you read about the way that World War II got into gear, so to speak, the power of the human desire for peace at any price is frightening. Peace at any price. That's what human nature wants. You see, like I said, you study the events leading up to World War II. You have to ask yourself, why were the European governments so unprepared? Why did the Danish Air Force have 8 modern fighters, or was it the Norwegian Air Force, against 940 modern aircraft of the Luftwaffe? Why? Why were the Russians unprepared? They had millions of men in their armies. Why were they so unprepared that within a short period of time after the German advance into Russia, 3 million Russian soldiers had been captured? Do you know why? It's because they didn't want to believe that war was possible. European politicians and populations didn't want to believe that war was possible, and yet the signs were there. Hitler, from 1936 to 1939, broke 7 treaties which had been made with him. He broke them, one after the other. He kept on doing it, and yet nobody would believe that he would do it again. And why? Because they wanted peace so badly. And finally, at Munich in 1938, Hitler had made another demand. He wanted the Sudetenland, which was part of Czechoslovakia, populated largely by ethnic Germans. He wanted it. He threatened war. The Allies met at Munich, and they gave in. They gave in to Hitler's demands. They didn't even notify the Czechoslovakian government. They didn't notify them that they had given in to Hitler, that they had ceded the Sudetenland to the German Reich, and German soldiers marched in there. Chamberlain and Daladier, the premiers of England and France, upon their return home, were proclaimed as the great victors of peace. Chamberlain came back and he said, peace in our time. And he was rapturously acclaimed by the English people because they didn't want to believe that war was possible. They didn't want to accept that there was a state of war, that it was already there. What a prodigious readiness to advance an enemy's cause, to collaborate with a man like Hitler, whether in Munich or elsewhere, in the blind and adamantine belief that anything was preferable to war. Many shared this belief, and the irresistible compulsion to swallow almost any rebuff, as long as it promised to avert or curtail the miseries of a fruitless conflict, dominated the hearts and minds of most Europeans long after World War II broke out. Listen to this sentence. Hitler established his dominion over a continent that continued to seek peace in the midst of war. Now, human nature doesn't want to recognize reality. Yours doesn't and mine doesn't. And Jeremiah spoke to Israel, and Israel at the time of the Babylonian captivity wanted to believe in peace. And Jeremiah said, "You all say peace, peace, and there is no peace." And you know, brethren, that's what God is saying to us. And if we heed, we'll be able to do the job. But if we believe that there is a state of peace, we will not do the job. Do you accept the reality of spiritual war going on right now? Do you make daily spiritual preparations for combat before you go out of that door? For combat? Do you even recognize where the battlefront is? A lot of us don't. You see, we're waiting for the receiver to come back in. Then we're going to get out the big guns. Then we're going to fast and we're going to pray. Or we're waiting for persecution to start. We're waiting for the fundamentalist groups to get together and to proclaim the worldwide Church of God anathema or something like that, you know, and to have computer programmers block all of our lines. Yes, we're waiting for that because then the enemy would be so obvious, wouldn't it? So obvious, and then we'll get into gear. Just like the French armies. Do you know what they did when they were thinking about the German attack? Because they knew the possibility was that the Germans would attack. They assembled 600,000 men before a strongly fortified line of forts running north to south in France called the Maginot Line. And do you know what the Germans did? They went around the Maginot Line. They just went around it. They never attacked it at all. And they'd beaten France in 19 days. And we're like that. We wait for an assault that isn't going to come because the war is going on right now. Right now. You see, where is the battlefront? Paul tells us where it is in 2 Corinthians 10, verse 3. 2 Corinthians 10, verse 3. For though we walk in the flesh, we do not war according to the flesh. In other words, the way that we fight is not with automatic weapons. It's a different sort of war. It's a different sort of battlefront. Verse 4, for the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty in God for pulling down strongholds, casting down arguments, and every high thing or high thought that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, bringing every thought into captivity to the obedience of Christ. That's the battlefront. It's in the mind. That's where your battlefront is. And do you accept the fact that war is going on there every day? That Satan's army of occupation is opposing you every day? You see, this is where the resisting is of our present stage of combat. It may very well assume more palpable, material, and visible forms in the future when persecution arises. But at present, we are in a real war. It's taking place every day. And are you aware of resisting every day? Are you aware of it? When you look back over this week, are you aware of having resisted something every day? Maybe it was the temptation to watch an R-rated movie. Or simply not to turn off the screen when you knew that you'd watched enough. Did you resist the temptation to watch the R-rated movie? Sure, your human nature feels a little disappointed afterwards, and you feel like you've been through a battle, right? Maybe the next time, because you don't want the battle, you'll turn on the R-rated movie, you see, because human nature wants peace, doesn't it? I do. I want peace. I don't want to have to fight, and yet I have to fight, and so do you. Every single one of you. You have to fight because we were called to resist. Do you fight vanity? The boss comes up at work and he says, "Oh, who did this wonderful job?" And vanity wants to jump up and say and stand there and salute and say, "That was my work, sir." Did you resist vanity this week? Or did you give in to vanity? Did you collaborate? Or do you recognize that you resist spending too much time with some person outside of the church, some attractive individual? Did you resist that, or did you give in to the temptation to spend time with that person? Did you recognize that you were having critical and negative thoughts? That maybe the mistakes and the errors of some person, maybe your immediate supervisor, were so evident to you that you found yourself dwelling on them and you found yourself becoming discouraged and bitter? Did you resist? Did you put positive thoughts in? Did you force yourself to do it? Did you cry out to God on your knees saying, God, give me the strength to have positive thoughts. I can't do it. I don't have positive thoughts under these circumstances. Did you do it? Did you keep well back from the gray areas? Because I'll tell you know what gray areas are? They need to be retitled. They should be called black holes. You go into the gray area, it's like the astronomers talk about the black holes. You're going to be sucked in until you finally disappear as a resistance fighter. They're not gray areas, they're black holes. You see, this is where the armament of God comes in again, because he offers the sword of the Spirit. Through the Spirit, we have the power to resist. We would have the power to resist and to cut off a relationship if it was wrong but tempting. We would have the power as long as the sword was sharp, and as long as you prepare to use it every day and you cry out to God saying, Lord, I'm going onto the battlefront again. Give me what I need. Give me your armor. Give me the sword so I can fight, so I can be prepared to cut off a hand if necessary. Christ said, if your right hand offends you, cut it off. He said, if your right eye offends you, gouge it out. Now, who would do that? Only a soldier at war, you see. And you won't do it unless you're prepared. See, the truth is this. If you're not aware of daily resisting, then are you a member of the resistance? Maybe you're not. Maybe you have become a collaborator, subconsciously and slowly, and you didn't even realize it was happening. You didn't even realize it. Maybe the rigors of combat, you know, the waiting, the lack of physical riches sometimes, the personal trials, the lack of peace. Maybe these have burdened you. Maybe you want peace so badly that you have left the resistance. Have you done that? See, there's no use saying, I don't support Satan. I don't believe in his way of get. I don't believe in lying. I don't believe in dishonesty, stealing, cheating, etc. You know what, brethren? The history says this. In Europe, from 1939 to 1945, the vast majority of people didn't believe in the Nazi doctrines, but their lack of active resistance, their conformity, played right into the occupying forces' hands. So what did the German Governor General of occupied Denmark telegraph Berlin that he needed most of all? The German Governor General of occupied Denmark telegraphed Berlin, and he said, what I need most to help me extract as much as possible from the Danish economy for the benefit of the German wartime effort was internal peace and quiet. That's what he needed. That's what Satan needs, too. All he needs is peace and quiet. And his work is done. You see, you may not be actively for Satan, but if you're not actively against him, that is, resisting his thoughts and his ways daily, then you are for him. Then you've left the resistance and you've become a collaborator with Satan's invisible army of occupation. There is no middle ground. See, James says, whoever makes himself a friend of the world makes himself an enemy of God. How do you make yourself a friend of the world? Do you know how you do it? Just by not resisting. That's how you do it. All you have to do to become a collaborator is not resist. Brethren, if you can remember that one sentence right there, then you've got the whole sermon. All you have to do to become a collaborator is to not resist. See, this is why Christ says, he who is not with me is against me. And he who does not gather with me scatters abroad. God needs all or he needs nothing. It's all or nothing. That's why he says in Revelation 3 in verse 15, Revelation 3 in verse 15, the members of the Church of God, I know your works, that you are neither hot nor cold. I could wish you were hot or cold. Verse 17, because you say, I am rich, I have become wealthy, and I have need of nothing. Does that sound like members of the resistance? No. Because you say, I am rich, have become wealthy, and have need of nothing, you do not know that you are wretched, miserable, poor, blind, and naked. That's reality, you see. But we want peace so badly, we ignore it. As I counsel you to buy for me gold refined in the fire that you may be rich, and white garments that you may be clothed that the shame of your nakedness may not be revealed, and anoint your eyes with eye salve that you may see. See what? Well, for us, brethren, it's that this society is not God's world. It is Satan's, and it is occupied by his invisible army. And what else? There is a tiny group of resistance fighters actively undermining that army of occupation. By what? It's by refusing to become like the present rulers, for one thing. That's also by actively preaching the return of the legitimate government. Because remember, another government is coming. And after World War II, the legitimate governments of Belgium, Holland, Poland, Greece, Yugoslavia, Norway, and others returned from London. And they began functioning in their war-ravaged countries again, just as the true ruler of Earth's nations departed as a nobleman journeying to a far country some 2,000 years ago. And while he's there at the Father's throne in the third heaven, he's directing his resistance forces back on Earth. He's directing them, and he's preparing a governmental structure to replace the present occupying armies. Governmental structure. Remember, he said, in my Father's house are many mansions. I go to prepare a place for you. That's talking about the legitimate government returning to replace the occupying army of Satan. Now he says, I go to prepare a place for you. What happened to Charles de Gaulle, the chief resistance fighter of the French nation after World War II? He became the head of the nation. And so it was with many members of the resistance when the Allied forces had finally won, the governments in exile returned to their countries. Similarly, members of God's resistance forces will receive high positions. Can you imagine the scene? I tried to picture this. It was a little hard to picture. Jesus Christ. Here he is in the blazing glory of the spirit body. Jesus Christ, the commander-in-chief, the supreme resistance fighter of all time. There he stands, surrounded by innumerable divisions of angels, and he's come to review his troops. And there they go, passing the reviewing stand, no longer disheartened, no longer discouraged, as they sometimes were, no longer crippled and slowed by illness like Bill Grice is at the moment and others in the congregation, no longer saddened by the losses of comrades or family members, no longer burdened by fear of persecution or fear of betrayal, no longer wounded and worried and lame and limping because of the constant resistance against sin, because all things have changed. They've been made new. And God promised, and he said, I will wipe away every tear from their eyes. There shall be no more death, nor sorrow, nor crying. There shall be no more pain, for the former things, including Satan's invisible army of occupation, are passed away. And then he who sat on the throne said, behold, I make all things new. Especially the coming government of God under Jesus Christ, the supreme resistance fighter. Why do I say the supreme resistance fighter? Because he was here. He was a member of the resistance. He was the head of the resistance. He experienced every single temptation and then some that each of us is required to experience. And at the end, he said this, be of good cheer. He said, I have overcome the world. Because he was the supreme resistance fighter, brethren, we can go to him and we can say, I need the armor. I need the equipment. Give me an airlift. I need it now. And he will, you see, no matter how weak, no matter how weary we are. He promised it. He can't help it. He was the chief resistance fighter. He knows exactly what it is that you're experiencing. In Isaiah 40 and verse 28, here in conclusion. Isaiah 40 and verse 28. Have you not known? Have you not heard? the everlasting God, the Lord, the creator of the ends of the earth. He neither faints nor is weary. There is no searching of his understanding. He gives power to the weak, and to those who have no might, he increases strength. He increases the strength of his resistance forces because he is the commander in chief. Even the youths shall faint and be weary, and the young men shall utterly fall, and we would if we had to do it on our own. But those who wait on the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and shall not faint. I think that the most fitting concluding comment, which God is saying, I think, to all of us at this time, is just this: onward, Christian soldiers.